Branch, our GBC, who is here for today, and also His Holiness Bhakti Anuradha Jonathan Maharaj. Anugraha Jonathan Maharaj. Homer, both personalities know quite well now, and we're expecting a little more devotees today, though we know. Devotees are scattered, Ramkatha and Mayberg. We're expecting about 80 to 100. Anyway, we're going to proceed with what we plan to do. His Grace Mahatma Prabhu ki
Jai.
So I'm about to post to you.
Yes. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale. Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastvichare Jitarne. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gauravakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Anchikapa Charibius Jaya Kripa Sindhu. Paditaram Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Nicely, it was worth a round of applause. And he's going to do this nicely too. See? Very nicely. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, devotees. Hare Bol! Welcome to our program this evening, and tonight we're going to acknowledge that this is the 50th anniversary of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada left India, what was it? Was it the 14th of August? 14th is my birthday, so. Brother left on the 13th of August, 1965. And so that's 50 years ago, at least a couple of months ago, and throughout ISKCON we're celebrating this wonderful, glorious, and extremely significant occasion. From that time, August time, through till next year, around that time, and all over the world, different special events. Some have already happened, some really wonderful events have happened already, and plenty more are planned and will happen, and I'm sure also that here in sunny Moritz we'll have some ecstatic programs. Well, and this is one of them. And on top of that, also extremely significant, and of course very, very relevant to us here in Mauritius, is that this is the 40th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's visit to Maurice. Hare Bol! Srila Prabhupada came.
Jai.
ISKCON Mauritius Yatra came.
Jai.
And Prabhupada, of course some of his devotees came a little bit before and they were doing some preaching, but then Prabhupada came in 1975 and due to his transcendental potency and his mercy and the inspiration that the devotees got from his visit, ISKCON Mauritius has developed from a yatra of, I think, what, 2 devotees, something like that, to thousands and many temples and centers and programs going on. So both of these occasions are really wonderful, really very, very important. And on top of just being nice and important and auspicious and significant, but they're also really wonderful opportunities for us to spread Krishna consciousness more around Mauritius. Devotees are always looking for an opportunity. How can we glorify Krishna? And how can we glorify Srila Prabhupada? So when some special events of these types come around, then devotees really try to seize them. Because after all, in material life, things like anniversaries and so on, people take them very seriously. Centennials and these types of events. Krishna consciousness is eternal. But of course we're happy to acknowledge how things have developed over the last 50 years all around the world, over the last 40 years here in Mauritius. But they're also just really wonderful opportunities for us to get the attention of the people in general and inform them of these occasions, and they'll become attracted. They'll become attracted that 50 years and they're still going. That's pretty good. Or in this case, 40 years and they're still going. That's it's significant. People will see it like that. So in that context, we thought that this evening, rather than just dedicate the programs to the 50th anniversary or the 40th anniversary and just look at those events in and of themselves, we thought that we would take some of the essential principles which are there in Krishna consciousness in general and which are really under these circumstances, because of these events, they really come to the forefront. Some of the basic principles of Krishna consciousness and the development of Krishna consciousness. And you may be aware, I'm sure many of you have heard, that Srila Prabhupada said about our process of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, books are the basis, preaching is the essence, purity is the force, and what's next? Utility is the principle. So we thought that we could examine these principles, these ideas a little bit this evening, in the context of these two events. and that we could all get a little inspiration from such a discussion to then take the events and propagate them and inform people of them and really make something big of these very important events. So in these four, well, you'll notice we have three of us are here. His Grace Mahatma Prabhu sitting next to me is a great veteran of ISKCON Mauritius. I'm sure many of you remember him from the old days, right here in Phoenix. And Solinus Bhakti Anugraha Janardhan Maharaj, who has quite a bit more recently started visiting Mauritius and giving the island the mercy of his association and giving all of us the great good fortune of his association. So we're going to go through these four principles. Bhakti Anugraha Janardhan Maharaj is going to begin with books of the basis. I'm going to then look at preaching is the essence, and His Grace Mahatma Prabhu will look at purity is the force, and what about utility is the principle? We'll leave that up to you to think, okay, how to take this forward in practical terms. All right, very good. Thank you all very much for coming. We appreciate your interest and involvement. Let us hand over now, if someone could just take the microphone, to His Holiness Bhakti Anugraha Janardhan Maharaj, who will talk about books are the basis. Hari Bol.
Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavani Paschatale Shatarine Om Ajnanati Nirandasya Gyanangyana Shalakaya Chakshuru Vijitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It was June 26, 1977. Srila Prabhupada heard the news about his books being distributed profusely all over the world. He heard the good news, a big report about book distribution. And he mentions that as long as his books are being distributed, he will never die. He will live for centuries. That was the time when Srila Prabhupada is already kind of ill. This was in Vrindavan. And so our society actually is based from the teachings of the Supreme Lord. And Srila Prabhupada translated many of these books from the ancient Vedas, especially the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when he left the Calcutta port on August 13th, 1965. He has to be sure that he is very well equipped, because he doesn't want to go to America as instructed by his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, empty-handed. He wanted to be sure that he will have something to give to the whole world that will have effect, so much so that they'll be able to curb their material attraction and repose to take shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So when they move the Jaladuta, they move to port in Cochin, they pick up some books. This is the first three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam that 200 sets, he brought with him 200 sets, along with practically empty-handed also, that he doesn't have any money, 40 rupees, and he sold the first three volumes of this to the captain of the Jaladuta for $20. So this was the beginning. Without the books that Srila Prabhupada translated for the benefit of everyone, we will not have a basis of our, how we're going to live our lifestyle the way we are right now. That's why it's called books are the basis. Means we become stronger in our Krishna consciousness. Those who are involved in Krishna consciousness for many, many years, in order to maintain their progress and increase their progress in Krishna consciousness, they have to keep reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And for those also who are beginners, those who just join, and many join because of Srila Prabhupada's books. Maybe some of them, or some of us, joined because of prasadam. But most of us joined because of Srila Prabhupada's books. How many of you joined because of receiving Srila Prabhupada's books? Have a show of hands, please. Many? Over 50%. How many because of prasadam? Very few. So how many of you joined? Oh, because your friends told you about the temple, I suppose. Yes? When the deities were installed in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, Prabhupada says that, yes, I can give lakhs and lakhs of rupees to build more temples like this, like the Krishna Balaram Mandir. But even better than this is publishing books, distributing books. As more as important of building temples is that distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. He says, if you want to please me, then distribute my books. And his Guru Maharaj sold him also to the bank of Radha Kund. Whenever you got money, print books. So without books, we're not be able to really tell the people that we are authentic, that we are bona fide. We're not sentimentalists here. Our basis is very sound, because by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, we'll be able to actually understand that we're not the body, we're spirit souls, and Krishna actually become realized. We'll be able to understand the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Otherwise, if we don't have any books, and we just say, Haribol, Haribol, we will not last long. And Prabhupada, as mentioned, my books will be the law book for the next 10,000 years. There will be always books, even though many technology advancing day by day, electronic wise, everything is in the iPad or iPhone or many electronic wise, but books will always be there. Books will be read by many people. Actually, Prabhupada is very happy to hear his books being distributed. Since whenever I hear the books being distributed, I feel like a young man. And we were discussing in the Srimad Bhagavatam part whereby the deterioration of the age of Kali due to the boy Sringi cursing Parikshit Maharaj, which is the start of Kali Yuga. These books, actually, if this is going to be distributed, especially to the government officials, those who are the leaders of the society nowadays, it will have a big impact. If they study and read these books, they'll be able to implement them to govern or rule the society, because ultimately the government is responsible for the upliftment of everyone, the citizens. If the government is corrupt, then we cannot expect that the people will be happy and live prosperously in this day and age. But somehow, if we able to give these books to those who are the intellects, to the academicians, that's why we rack our brains as much as possible how we'll be able to distribute these books in every kind of people in the society. We go door to door, we go person to person, and some of our devotees are very expert to meet those who are in the government positions. So if they take this up, then more likely one day that the whole Mauritius also will become Krishna conscious. As Prabhupada says, this may become the first Krishna conscious country, which is good right now because our leader here is named Jagannath. So by the name itself, it's closer to the name of the Lord. So these books are very special. They are priceless. No amount of wealth can be equal with the contents, what we can find in these books. And very appropriate enough, when Srila Prabhupada started the movement in New York, the storefront was named Matchless Gifts. Because this is a matchless gifts. No amount of wealth can be equal to the knowledge, because knowledge cannot be taken away. Money, you can go bankrupt, you can lose the money, but the knowledge that we can acquire from reading these books, and especially not just reading, but applying them to our everyday activities, everyday lives, will be eternally benefited. So Prabhupada says, if you want to please me, then distribute these books. Prabhupada mentions one time that I did not write these books just for distribution. I wrote these books for my disciples to read. He mentions that what is the use if you are distributing books and then the person asks, have you read this book? And you said, no sir, we don't read these books, we just distribute these books. Then how are we going to be able to convince them to really get this knowledge, acquire this knowledge, So in order to distribute books, we have to be determined as well. Be convinced of the books. Apply it to ourselves. Especially this month of December is considered Srila Prabhupada's book distribution marathon month. So devotees all over the world, different centers of ISKCON, they're rallying, they're sacrificing their time, they extend their time for book distribution, whether it is freezing cold or hot places, but mostly freezing cold, because now winter time in Europe or the Western countries. They sacrifice because they know that this is the best time also to distribute books, because people are in this very good mood of spending money. It is an excuse. Holiday seasons is an excuse for them to spend more. So they try their best. And Prabhupada, he wished that every home should have one full set of Srimad Bhagavatam. He mentioned one time. Or at least one book. All the householders all over the world. He said that at least if they have a book or a set of the Srimad Bhagavatam at their house or residence, it is certain that they'll become a devotee. It is certain that they'll become a devotee. So we are very fortunate enough, somehow we are in this process. We're practicing the process of bhakti yoga. We're proud to become devotees of the Supreme Lord, but we should not be proud that we are better than the materialist. Because if we think like that, then we will not have this compassionate nature, and we will not able to help them also to come to the process of changing their lives for the better, to become devotees of the Supreme Lord. If you know a good secret, you want to share it with others. It's a secret, but it's good. You heard that story of the disciple, the spiritual master said that I'm giving you this mantra, but don't tell it to others because this mantra will liberate you. So he went to the marketplace and he shouted to everybody, please chant this name. What's that mantra? Om Namo Narayana. Om Namo Narayana. Chant this and you will all be liberated. And the guru chastised the disciple. I told him not to tell this to everyone. Well, I don't mind going to hell, as long as everyone will go back home, back to Godhead. So similarly, these books are most confidential knowledge. For those who really wanted to attain love of God, we have to study them and share it with others. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita, no one is more dear to me than those who give this knowledge to others. If we want to expedite our going back home, back to Godhead, then distribute books as many as possible. Because at least if one of those personalities who receive books from you will become a devotee, then guarantee you'll also go back home, back to Godhead. So books are the basis, not box is the basis. Money, Prabhupada says, as long as you distribute books, we can maintain actually our temples just by distributing books. Many temples are built by book distribution alone. Big temples in India, like Tirupati. Oh, we have ISKCON Tirupati there. It's been built, especially there, distributing books. But whatever we can, Krishna never forgets. If we can distribute even at least one book, it's like we had a meeting last night, and everyone did a pledge that at least they will distribute one book, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So please, if you can do that also as well, that will help spread Krishna consciousness in Mauritius and thereby become fulfilled this prediction of Srila Prabhupada that Mauritius could be the first country in the world to become Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. How nice. How wonderful. Ecstatic. Thank you. I see Zach. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravadi Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastitya Deja Tarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkabhatarivyasthakvita sindhubhyevacha. Pajitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. I just, Maharaj was talking about how when we distribute the books, we have to read them. Prabhupada wrote the books for his disciples. And, you know, I'm going to say some things about how preaching is the essence. I thought I'd just mention one little experience I had when Srila Prabhupada came to England. Maybe it was 75. I actually forget exactly when, maybe it was 76. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada came, and when Prabhupada would come to Europe, and he would mainly come to England and to Bhaktivedanta Manor, so many devotees, the majority of devotees from all over Europe, would come to the manor, and there'd be hundreds of devotees there. So the German book distribution party came, and they were what you would call heavy brahmacharis. I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but they were very assertive, very strong-willed, and also strong body too. And Srila Prabhupada gave them a special darshan. There was like 20 or 25 of them there or something like that in Prabhupada's main room, darshan room, in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Somehow or other I got in there also. And all these book distributors, they're like beaming, they're effulgent. And they were with Prabhupada, so happy. And Srila Prabhupada said, "So, what is the main thing?" And many hands went up. And they said, "Book distribution, Srila Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "No." And they got a little taken aback. Preaching, Srila Prabhupada? No. And then they suggested a few other things, and every time Prabhupada said no. And finally they became quiet. No more suggestions. And Prabhupada said, "You must read these books. I have written these books for you." And as Maharaj mentioned, Prabhupada said that, how will it be if you are out there distributing these books and the person asks you, "Oh, what is this book about?" And then you say, "Well, I don't know, but it's a very good book and you should buy it. So it's not going to work. It's just not real. Okay. Anyway, that was an interesting experience, sort of imprinted in my little brain. In regard to preaching, just in the broad sense, preaching, I wanted to also tell a couple of little stories. One story, it was just after I joined the temple. I moved into the temple in London. Berry Place was the little road near the British Museum I moved in. In the morning, it was maybe 9 o'clock or something. January the 7th, 1973, I moved in. And it was a Sunday. So there I was, and life was going on in the temple. I was there maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month, and then something happened, which was very significant in general and in regard to this idea of preaching being the essence. It was maybe 3 weeks later, maybe 4 weeks. It was a Sunday again. And Sunday program and Sunday feast. And you know, well, in those days in London, the Sunday feasts, they were serious. I assume they're serious here too. Not just shoo-shoo and gropoir, but which of course are very nice, but anyway, they were really serious feasts, I tell you. They would just get into it so much. So program, Sunday program ended, we all queued up, got our plates of prasadam. I got my plate also. And there were guests. You know, there must have been 50 or 60 guests or something like that. But I got my plate of prasadam and I looked at it. What? It was like a masterpiece. It was just amazing. All these wonderful prasadam preparations. Just effulgent golden samosas and so on. And I thought, right, great. I have perfected my life here. Anyway, something. So I got my plate and I thought, right, I am going to find a quiet spot, you know, over the back, around the corner, out of the way a bit, and I am just going to respect my prasadam and just really relish it, which is good. It's not bad, it's good. So I sat down, plate in front of me and hand poised, ready, and just about, my hand's just about to come down, and suddenly this young man, guest, just sat down right in front of me, just directly across my plate of prasadam, like 2 feet away from me at the most. And he said, please, tell me about Krishna. Please just tell me all about it. I really want to know. And I'll be completely honest with you, devotees. My spontaneous reaction was, oh no. This is just a confession, so what can I say? But I'd only been a devotee, it was either 3 or 4 weeks, because I joined on a Sunday, so I was really one of the new boys. So what could I do? You know, he was just so, like, anxious. Please, tell me about Krishna. I want to know. Tell me now. So, not that I knew much, but there was nothing I could do. So I had to start preaching to him. And I did. And it was really quite an amazing experience. And within, I'd say, a few minutes, I had kind of forgotten about the prasadam. And I was just into, you know, telling him whatever I knew about Krishna. And he would occasionally ask a question. Oh, what does this mean, this? You know, like his life depended on knowing. And so, yes, so I got into it. And before I knew it, people were getting up and, you know, throwing away their plates and washing their hands, and everyone pretty much had finished, except me. I hadn't started. Yeah, you know, like 20, 30 minutes later. And I was feeling so exhilarated, just like surcharged. Frankly, I had never felt like that before, I would say. You know, certainly not prior to Krishna consciousness, and even having just started Krishna consciousness, this was just such an outstanding experience. So amazing. And from that I understood, you know, I got a realization. I think it's a very important realization. You know what the realization was? Preaching is better than prasadam. Yeah? And prasadam is glorious, it's wonderful. And it's, you know, it's vital, it's just, it's not even important, it's just essential. But that experience, just after a few weeks in Krishna consciousness, it was such a powerful experience, and I've never forgotten it, really. So, preaching. If you want to give a devotee a chance to experience some nectar, give them an opportunity to preach. And at least if they embrace it and they really take hold of it and apply themselves wholeheartedly, they'll really get nectar. So that experience, that was such a vivid experience. Then I wanted to tell you another little story. It was from another experience I had in Srila Prabhupada's room in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And it was, you know, sort of mid-70s or something along those lines. Prabhupada was giving a darshan in the afternoon, maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that. And there were not more than 10 of us in the room with Srila Prabhupada. And people, devotees were asking questions, Prabhupada was answering, and one devotee asked a very interesting question, and I think it's the only time, it's the only time I can remember Prabhupada addressing this particular point. The devotee asked the question that if we are practicing Krishna consciousness and we make some offense or we do something wrong, we make a mistake, you know, just something like that, then we'll get a reaction. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. And the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada is it the same for devotees who are preaching and distributing books. He actually also mentioned distributing books and preaching also in the broad sense. Is it the same that you make mistakes, you know, particularly when you're new in Krishna consciousness, or practically, particularly any time mistakes happen? It's the material world, and it's just the nature of this world, this material world, particularly in Kali Yuga, is Kalo Doshinide Rajan. It's just an ocean of fault. So anyway, the devotee asked that, is it the same if you're preaching? And Srila Prabhupada gave, I think, an extremely important answer. Prabhupada said, if you're just doing some service and living in the temple, he even addressed that point, just living in the temple, just doing some service, you do something wrong, you will get some reaction. But if you're preaching, then Krishna, he'll just take away the reaction just like that. Yeah. That the service is very, very dear to Krishna, and Krishna is very kind to the devotees who preach. So even if they do something wrong, for which some reaction would normally be due, then Prabhupada said, Krishna just takes it away very, very quickly. So that's another thing, you know, experience which I remember very vividly. So yes, preaching, well, Prabhupada said preaching is the essence. Book distribution is, of course, a form of preaching, although it's the most, Prabhupada emphasized it as the most important form of preaching. But it's one type of preaching. And let me just have a look at my little notes here. Hari Bol. Yeah. Well, Maharaj mentioned these two verses from the 18th chapter. I had noted them down. Let me just read them to you. It's Bhagavad Gita 18. 68 and 69. Ya idam param guyam mad bhakte shvabhadasyati bhaktim mai param kritva ma me vaishyatya samshaya. For one who explains this supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed. And at the end, he will come back to me. You know, just as a little point of English grammar for what it's worth. In English grammar, a distinction is made between shall and will. Are you aware of that? This is just a minor point, but it is a point of English language grammar. Something may happen. If it's really that it is going to happen, then you would say will happen. If it's not, maybe, you know, totally clear, but, you know, it seems like there's a good chance, then you would say shall. This distinction is made. Yeah. I mean, it's a little technical, but it's there. So it's interesting, Prabhupada in the translation has said, that Krishna has said, at the end, he will come back to me. Means it is going to happen. It's not like, you know, a good chance, but it will, it's actually going to happen. And then, so that's 1868, and then 1869, Nachatasman manushyeshu kashchin me priya kritama bhavata nacha me tasmad anya priyataro bhuvi There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Isn't that significant? Now, of course, one point which devotees sometimes note in it, anyway, they note it sometimes, is that in the first of these two verses, 68, Krishna has said, the one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, he will come back to me. So sometimes devotees raise the point that, well, it appears to me that this is referring to preaching to the devotees like yourselves, and it may not really include general preaching to the people at large. But if you go through Prabhupada's teachings and lectures and writings and so forth, you'll see that Srila Prabhupada quite often quotes or refers to these verses, you know, quite often. And oftentimes when he does that, and, you know, he's sort of extolling the glories and the value of preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness, but Prabhupada applies it often in that broader sense of just preaching Krishna consciousness to the world and to the people in the world, and not just like giving a Bhagavad Gita class to the devotees in the temple or something like that. So, yeah. So this is preaching, and this is Krishna himself speaking. That, and Krishna, this is 1868, Krishna just spoke 1866, which I assume you all know, being knowledgeable devotees. Sarva Dhamma Pritcha Jamami Kam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tam Sarva Pabhyo Mukshaye Shami Vasucha. Just give up all your other dharmas, just surrender to me. In other words, just become a devotee and render devotional service, and Krishna says, I'll deliver you and you'll go back to Godhead. So then, now, two verses later, Krishna, having said that we should do this, give up everything else and just dedicate ourselves to serving him in devotion, then Krishna here points out that, all right, if you're going to be a devotee and render devotional service, well, here is the best service. There's so many things you can do, and they're all very nice, but here is the main one. You preach this message, give this message to the people, to the world, and you do that, then pure devotional service is guaranteed, and in the end, you will come back to Krishna. And there never really could be someone, a devotee, more dear to the Lord than that preacher. So this is all very significant. Preaching is the essence. And let me just close by mentioning something from a little, like a different perspective on the subject, but it's also very important, is that in material life, people become very selfish. I mean, they are here because they're selfish. Me. I want to be the one. And so in material life, everyone is thinking like that. self-centered and selfish. What's in it for me? And therefore people become hard-hearted in relation to others. Now, you have a problem? Well, it's your problem. See you later. Don't bother me until don't bother me with your problem. People become hard-hearted. Even to the point that now I was reading, actually a couple of years ago in Germany, one charitable organization, like big charitable organization, handling millions of euros every year, they got taken to court or arrested, or the leaders got arrested, because they did like a financial disclosure. And in the disclosure, you know what they disclosed? That of all these millions they collected, only about between 1% and 2% actually went to help the people. And the other 98 went to, quote unquote, administrative costs, you know, like wages. And so this was a scandal. And I remember reading about it on CNN, so it must have been true. And so anyway, there's this big court case, and I read about it. And the leader of the group in the court, he said, you know, you're taking us to task like this. But the thing is, you've got to understand, this is how charitable organizations normally work. Yeah. It's not like some weird, some extraordinary organization. This is just normal. A small amount goes to the actual activity, and the great majority goes to all the functional costs and whatnot. So that's an example, isn't it? Hard-heartedness. Yeah. In the name of helping people, the main thing is we're helping ourselves. And if there's anything left over, maybe we'll give some to help the suffering people. So yeah, material life is full of, by definition really, it's very selfish, self-centered, and therefore people become hard-hearted towards others, generous to themselves, and don't care about others. So now, we're coming from material life, and we also have the typical bad habits of material life quite ingrained in us, including the selfishness and like that. So we need to break that. We really need to break that selfishness and soften our hearts and develop some compassion. We really need to do that. So how are we going to do that? Well, of course, you know, in one sense, the whole process of Krishna consciousness, beginning with chanting our rounds, it's all part of, you know, working towards that. But in a very direct sense, preaching is a very important, you could say, sadhana. Not just a service of giving people Krishna consciousness, but it's also a very important sadhana for us, for purifying our hearts. Because if you, in the beginning, like when you go out and distribute books, for example, then you may feel a little frightened. If I approach this person, he may shout at me, or he may reject me, or something like that. And we may be a little hesitant. But if we dive in and if we try, we are acting compassionately. because we're helping the people, giving them Krishna consciousness. It is compassionate. Although we may not feel the emotion, we may even feel, you know, a little anxious and a little uncomfortable meeting the people and having to deal with them sometimes. But the fact is, the activity is compassionate. And if we keep performing that compassionate activity, gradually that compassion will really become established in our hearts. So therefore, preaching is the essence also for us. Not just for helping the people, but for us. Such an important part of the process of purifying the heart, getting free from the hard-heartedness and the selfishness, and softening the heart, and in that way progressing in Krishna consciousness ourselves, while helping the world and pleasing Srila Prabhupada, who wanted this done so much. So these are a few thoughts on the subject. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, let us call on His Grace Mahatma Prabhu to talk about how purity is the force. Thank you.
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Charine Devi Sesha Shanyavadi Paschatavasthi Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangu Langayate Giri Vakrupatamaham Vande Siguru Dinatangas. So, just want to let you know that Maharaj has a sister. She's a very interesting name. Anyone like to guess what her name is? It's a name that you well know. Just take a guess. Her name is Mahatma. Disappeared. Amazing. Today was a very weird day. It took me like a half an hour to try to get these quotes on here. And the internet was going crazy and this was turning off. Now it just disappeared. You know Thursday afternoon? You know about Thursday afternoon? Well, Prabhupada never inaugurated anything on Thursday afternoon, so he tried to save a file on Thursday afternoon and it just disappeared. Amazing. Anyway, I had saved some quotes of things that Prabhupada said on purity. And the reason I had saved them, I wanted to read them, because purity is the force. It sounds nice, doesn't it? It's got a nice ring to it. You know? Like, start a bottled water company, and that could be your line on every part. You know? Purity is the force. You know? You have t-shirts, purity is the force. It's, you know, billboards. Sounds good, doesn't it? You like the sound? Nice tone. Could have a restaurant. Purity is the force. You know, pure vegetarian. Purity is the force. So then naturally, we have to ask, well, what does purity mean? I mean, what does purity mean to you? When we say purity is the force, how do you define purity? Because you could imagine it in so many ways. And how did Prabhupada define it? And Prabhupada defined it in many ways, and he also exemplified it. And I think one of the essential ways in which he defined it, he used to say we should have no personal ambition. But always the mission is first. And our mission is the mission. That means no personal ambition. If there's the mission and there's your ambition, then that is not purity. As Maharaj was saying, that's selfish. And there's always a tendency for that to happen. There was one president of the United States. He famously said, you can accomplish anything if you don't care who gets the credit. You're on a team, you have the mission, you have the group. Groups are powerful. They can achieve amazing things. But as soon as somebody becomes concerned with getting credit for what the group is doing, or getting some recognition, it contaminates. So, personal ambition, it can come up in many ways. But we should be well aware that this is Prabhupada's definition, at least one of them. It's the mission. What's the mission? You sacrifice for the mission. That's purity. You understand? It's like, we're not here so we can get Mahaprasadam. Well, maybe we are, but we shouldn't be. Actually, I'm quite hungry. Is there any Mahaprasadam? I actually didn't come here for Mahaprasadam. But in Vrindavan, when you give class, they give you Mahaprasadam at the end. It's not why I give class, but it's a nice side benefit because it's the only temple that does that. Anyway, but that's not why we give class. And it's not why we become a temple president or a guru or a GVC or a sannyasi or anything, because we can get Mahaprasadam or get a position. And we only do it because we can serve the mission, right? That's the only reason we do it. We don't do it for any other reason. And if we do for any other reason, that is not purity. And therefore we lose the force, because purity is the force. Does that make sense? Yeah. I was reading a book, and the name of the book is entitled Humans Are Underrated. And it's an interesting title, isn't it? What did he mean, humans are underrated? Because everything that we used to do, computers can do. So, I mean, do we even need ourselves anymore? I mean, I guess we have to operate the computers, but they're also saying in the future there'll be robots, and if the robots are nice, they'll, you know, they'll keep us around. They'll be running around us. They'll be more intelligent and more capable. So he's saying, within a few short years, there's going to be nothing that we can do that a computer can't do better. So, what are we useful for? He said, what we do better is work with one another. Relationships form groups. And he said that there's nothing in the world that was ever achieved by an individual that ever came close to what a group was able to achieve. There's a saying, if you get to the top of a mountain that's not very high, that means you climbed alone. You didn't climb with the group. Because if you climb with the group, you go very high. And so, the book pointed out the power is in the group. And this same point is there. The power is in the group, not in the individual. And they said, if any individual dominates a group, he destroys it. He has to support it. He has to support the others. It's all about support. And they even said that if you have individuals like that in a group, you should pull them out, because they'll ruin it. They'll ruin the power of it. So that's purity. You get pure people together, purity is a force. You have a real force. Now, interesting thing about ISKCON is when Prabhupada came to America, he said, and he noticed, there were many swamis and gurus, what we call the uptown swami, because in New York, where Prabhupada went, in Manhattan, you had uptown and you had downtown. You know, I don't know, you don't really have downtown here, but you know, like Port Louis would be downtown, Cupid would be uptown, Backwall is uptown, around here is kind of uptown now. So uptown is a wealthy area, and downtown where the temple was the poor area. So he noticed that many uptown swamis came, and they preached something which was non-committal. What we call wishy-washy. You don't really know what they're preaching, but everyone can participate. And it's good for business, because you can get a lot of followers and a lot of donations, because you don't really polarize anybody by demanding that they do anything. So Prabhupada said, I could have made many disciples and had many more followers if I would have compromised. He said, but I was prepared not even to make one disciple, but I wouldn't compromise my principles. And that's why ISKCON succeeded, isn't it? What if Prabhupada decided, all right, these hippies are pretty fallen, so we'll do like 2.5 regulative principles. And we'll do 16 rounds on Saturday and Sunday, and weekdays, whatever you can do. Do your best. Right? It would be a much different movement, don't you think? And what I've always noticed is that Prabhupada said, there are other organizations that are more well managed than ours. Do you agree? And that's not saying much, I guess, for the other organizations, because we're not that well managed. But he said there are other organizations, they're more well managed than ours. Better managers, better leaders, more intelligence. Whatever. Bigger buildings, better properties. He said, but what do we have that they don't have? He said, it's the purity. That's what distinguishes us. They don't have that. And if we lose that, we certainly don't have the best properties and the best managers and the most money. So if we lose the purity, there's no competition. They say in business, you shouldn't try to compete, but you should become unique. You should be what the others aren't. If you're competing, you're not going to really make it in the world. The best businesses, like Google, you know how successful Google is. They weren't trying to compete. Microsoft wasn't trying to compete. They created something new. Apple wasn't trying to compete. They created unique products. So it said, don't try to be, you know, the top in the field. Create your own field. Be unique in your area. And that's what Prabhupada did. Because before Prabhupada came, where was there a movement established on these principles, on this high level of purity? There wasn't, at least not that I'm aware of. So Prabhupada said, therefore, if we lose the purity, what distinguishes us from the others? So that's the one distinguishing characteristic, isn't it? And years ago, I was meditating on this idea, and I realized at our Sunday feast, people are coming and people are attracted because they know if they come to the temple, here's where they'll find pure devotees. Here's where they'll find people who chant 16 rounds and follow the regular principles. You agree? This was like 20, 30 years ago. I was in America, and I was thinking, what if our devotees didn't do this? I think people would lose faith in us. A lot of people can't follow the principles and chant 16 rounds, but they want to come and associate with people who do. Imagine you're struggling to follow the principles and chant 16 rounds, and there's not one person on the planet that's doing it. How would you feel? You would feel kind of helpless, wouldn't you? So I really sense that even though we may not be aware of it, we're inspiring people by our purity, because they know they can always come to a temple and find pure devotees. You probably know the story. Prabhupada was asked, Srila Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are on the planet? The devotee who asked the question was thinking maybe that there's three. Really the question was, is there another pure devotee on the planet other than you? That was the intent of the question. And Prabhupada just said, how many devotees are in ISKCON? And he said, whatever he said, 1,000. And Prabhupada said, then there's 1,000 pure devotees. So that came as a shock to us, because we didn't see ourselves as pure devotees. I'll tell a story that will explain this. Early on in the movement, there was a new sannyasi, and Prabhupada asked him to chant on the beads of the initiates, because Prabhupada was doing a big initiation. So you can imagine, it's kind of weird to chant on the beads of your god brothers or god sisters, don't you think? Wouldn't you feel weird if your spiritual master on initiation day said, I'm kind of tired, here's a bag of 20 beads, can you chant on them for the initiates? What would you think? You would think, what is devotee thought? He said, Prabhupada, how can I do that? I'm not pure. And like Maharaj was saying, you may not be compassionate, you may not feel it, but if you act it, then you're acting. As Prabhupada said, you're serving the movement of compassion. You're doing compassionate action. So Prabhupada said, my order is pure. And if you execute my order, then your action is pure. Isn't that nice? So that's what Prabhupada meant by 1,000 pure devotees. You get a pure order, and you execute it purely, which means your motive is simply what? To satisfy the Guru, and satisfy Krishna, and satisfy the Vaishnavas. That's pure. That's our definition of pure in our Shastra. That's what pure means. It's all about the motive. It's all about why. Have you ever been motivated to do something to get recognition? Service. I'm not talking at work or in school, but devotional service. Have you ever positioned yourself to think, if I get the microphone now, then I can impress a few people? If I can stand here and I'll impress them? Yeah, we all do that. We've all done it, right? You won't raise your hand, it's too embarrassing. I'll answer the question for you. Yes. That's our condition. That's our reality. But the purity we want is that not any action, any thought, anything I do is motivated by a desire other than pleasing my Guru. That's it. And that's the force of wisdom. Isn't it? The Prabhupada stressed it. I'll tell a couple stories, we'll end with a few stories. Maybe you know these stories, but they're nice to tell. The story that impresses me most is the story of Radha Damodar Party, which was the most successful book distribution party in the history of ISKCON. Partially because they stole brahmacharis out of temples. But they had a lot of them. But also due to the fact that the brahmacharis were no longer in the temples, but were traveling with sannyasis, so it was an ideal situation. The problem was that every time they would pull up to the temple with their bus, there'd always be a few less brahmacharis in the temple when the bus left. And of course the temples needed their brahmacharis, because every temple is short-handed. Right? There's never enough devotees. So, it was kind of an innocent thing. You know, the brahmacharis were preaching to the other brahmacharis that life on the bus, it's really nice. Plus, if you stay in a temple, you're probably just going to get married, which there could be nothing worse than that happening. Because that was a philosophy in those days. That was like, It was kind of like you could die or you could get married, and it was a tough choice which one, you know, you would take. It was like, it was seriously, it was like, oh, if I get married, it's like, that could be worse than death. So the brahmacharis are very enthusiastic, and so they were snatching devotees everywhere they went. Because in their enthusiasm, they were just preaching them. Sometimes the sannyasis were also preaching them. What are you doing at the temple? What's your service? Are you inspired or not really? Would you be inspired to come with sannyasis? Yeah, that sounds good. But why don't you just come with us for a few days? We're just going to go to the next temple, and if you don't like it, then okay. Yeah. And they wouldn't even tell their temple president. They'd just go. Or they called him after they'd gone. So it hit a threshold in which there was a revolution against this party because it was destructive to the temples. And it came to Prabhupada. Make a long story short, Prabhupada did something amazing. This was the biggest book distribution party in the world, and Prabhupada pulled the leader out, and the leader told him, if you take me out, this party will fall apart. It did fall apart. And Prabhupada said, it is not your party anymore. It's mine, and you're out. Prabhupada destroyed a book distribution party, the biggest in the world, because it was creating a faction in our movement. It was creating an impurity. Isn't that amazing? To maintain the purity and sobriety and unity of the movement, he stopped the biggest book distribution party, book distribution being the most dear thing. That's amazing if you think about it. Isn't it? To maintain purity, he would do anything practically. Another story, which was maybe 1974, they had another traveling party called the Roadshow. They had a band and they were doing concerts and festivals, and it was very successful. And doing dramas. But part of what was happening is due to the nature of that festival party, there were men and women together, and the association was not entirely pure. They were in plays together and they were changing costumes behind the stage in proximity to one another. And nobody was falling down, and nobody was taking drugs, and nobody was sleeping in. But some devotees felt this is not the best thing. Maybe we should just do Harinam Sankirtan and forget the festivals. But it was a successful program. And when Prabhupada found out that this was going on between a man and a woman, nothing had happened, but it wasn't ideal association, he stopped the party. He said, forget it. Just, that was it. It's over. Finished. Just do Harinam Sankirtan and book distribution. A successful program, and he stopped it. So there are many stories like that, but it just shows how Prabhupada was so concerned to maintain purity. Because purity is the force, it's the essence of our movement. And if we as individuals have personal ambition, personal agendas, then we're contaminating Prabhupada's pure movement. That's how we should think. We should think he came to establish something pure. We're contaminated. And the legacy of ISKCON is its purity. The culture of ISKCON is its purity. And the culture is what will last after we die. And we are responsible for creating a culture that will last into the future. Okay, I'll tell you a story. This is a very interesting story. I just read this to you. But first, somebody wants to see us. Or they're going to see who's here to see us. So I'll tell a little story and then I'll end with a story. There's a company, and what they do is they work with corporations and they help corporations establish a high culture based on the values, the essence of what the company wants to share with the world, why they exist, and the values that they want to live by. And they help ingrain that in their culture. So this man said that he was working with the company and he had helped him. And he'd gone back 10 years later, and there was not one person working in the company 10 years later that was there when he was visited and established the culture 10 years earlier. And he said when he came back, the company was exactly the same as he left it, because the culture was maintained, even though the employees had really changed. Isn't that amazing? So what's our culture? That's our culture of purity. And so we have to maintain, we have to make sure that that culture is ingrained in ISKCON and that it lives on, because that's what will make it successful. And without purity, we fail, because there's no force. That's our force. Not our money, not our great management, not even our great kirtan. There are people out there that are as good or better than we are, isn't it? At least they're more famous than we are, right? And we're not the greatest speakers. The greatest speakers do work seminars with 2,000 to 5,000 people, each paying about $2,000. So we're not on that level yet. But purity they don't have. And that's our force. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. O Premanandi Hari Hari.
One time, Srila Prabhupada was once asked, because a reporter, he can tell the stature of Srila Prabhupada, very highly elevated soul, and his amazing personality. So he asked Prabhupada, so how many personalities like you are in the planet? That was a question. And Prabhupada says, few. Not very many. But why don't you become one? So we can follow in the footsteps of a pure devotee, become like him, and in this way we'll be able to share whatever we can with others by the purity we can get from following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
So there's one sannyasi, his name is Guru Kripa, and he was a leading devotee during Prabhupada's time. And Prabhupada woke him up once, 12 or 1 in the morning, and asked an interesting question. What were you doing? An interesting question to ask somebody at midnight or 1 in the morning. What were you doing? Prabhupada, I was sleeping. Why are you sleeping? Prabhupada, because I'm tired. Why are you tired? Why aren't you up late at night? Why aren't you up early in the morning like I am, or late at night, writing books? Prabhupada, because I'm not a pure devotee like you. Why you're not a pure devotee like me? So many times Prabhupada would say, do as I'm doing. He actually expected us to be like him. He would travel around the world. His servants would be jet-lagged. They were looking for any moment to take a nap. And Prabhupada would wake them up. He said, why are you sleeping? I'm not sleeping. And they're in their 20s. And Prabhupada was in his 70s. Amazing. Do what I'm doing. Why are you sleeping? Why are you not writing books? Amazing.
Thank you so much to Mahatma Prabhu and Bhakti Anugraha Janardhan Maharaj for those wonderful, wonderful insights. Sure, I really feel enriched from it all, and thank you all for coming and participating. And try and take what you've heard into your hearts and really keep it there. Krishna consciousness is a transformational process through this wonderful association. If we take it into our hearts, we'll transform for the better, and we'll be very happy, and we'll become more and more able to spread Krishna consciousness. Please, Srila Prabhupada, Radha Goloka Nanda. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. So, Hare Krishna, thank you all very, very much. And see you tomorrow night at Mayborg. Sri Jagannath Rath Yatra Mahotsava ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaura Premanande. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Thank you.